Dave Hodgson, The Daily.
Okay, we've got BBC Music reporter now, Mark Savage, online. Good afternoon, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad, Mark. Not too bad. Last time we spoke, we were talking Christmas music, and it feels like a long time ago now.
It does look. Feels like it's got colder since then.
It's got colder here in Spain, and I know you guys are getting it at the moment, aren't you? It's really cold there.
Yes, I'm heading up to my in-laws this weekend. Apparently it's going to snow every day for the whole of the week. So that's pretty exciting.
If you can get there, yeah.
Well, at least I'll feel I'm in the spirit of the Olympic Games.
Brilliant, yeah. Right then, there's been apparently a bit of furore over the Grammy Awards row over lack of female winners and nominees.
Yeah, so it was the Grammy Awards just at the start of the month there, and it was one of those nights where people went in with a lot of assumptions. They thought Kendrick Lamar, who'd got a huge number of nominations, was going to steal all of the awards and turn it into a very hip-hop-centric event. Jay-Z, Beyonce's husband, had the most nominations of anybody on the night, and it turned out that neither of them did that well. Bruno Mars took all of the awards, and of the awards that are shown on television, only one was won by a woman. And there was a lot of talk, you know, because the event had been in support of Me Too. There were performances that were talking about sexual harassment in the music industry. Mm. There was a feeling that the actual results of the awards didn't reflect the social movement that was going on in the discussion around the awards, but also on stage.
This came up at the Oscars a few times, and now it seems to be here as well. What can we put this down to? Is it the fact that it is biased, or is it just the way it's gone? Has it been intentional? I suppose it's difficult to kind of gauge, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there is definitely a feeling that the representation of women in the voting academy, who are deciding who wins what awards, is not up to scratch. Mm. We know that in senior positions in the music industry, women are underrepresented, and some of the most senior women did actually write to the recording academy last week to say, you know, this situation is not up to scratch, we need to do something about it. And by all accounts, that letter has pretty much been ignored, which suggests a kind of a lack of awareness of the issues at the top of the Recording Academy in America. The president came out after the Grammys and said women need to step up if they want to win awards, which of course then kicked off a whole second round of fury about the situation. He kind of backtracked. He said what he was saying was that women in the industry who are already working in these high-profile jobs need to make sure that they are part of the discussion too. But certainly those comments did not go down well.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you think in this kind of climate at the moment that, companies would be falling over themselves to get this right, you know. But it's not like we've not come across this in other areas already.
No, and you do think of the music industry as being somewhere where female artists do very well. You know, you look at the last couple of years and you've had Adele, you've had Beyonce, Rihanna. You know, they are setting the agenda in terms of the most forward-thinking and interesting music. And, of course, this is one of the things that always happens at the Grammys. They tend to give the awards to the safest acts. I'm, you know, a big fan of Bruno Mars, but he's not a cutting-edge artist. He is someone that is referring back to the 1990s with his latest album. He stole a lot of his moves by watching James Brown. He was a kind of nightclub entertainer when he was growing up in his teenage years. And there is one of my favourite critics, John Caramanica at the New York Times. He says that he always decides who's going to win Best Album at the Grammys by looking at the album that has the oldest song on it. With Bruno Mars, like, paying tribute to people like Bobby Brown and Belle Biv DeVoe and the music he grew up with in the 90s. His album was probably the most dated-sounding record on the list. And, you know, that rule of thumb that John sticks by came true.
Absolutely. And actually, some of his stuff has got quite a 70s feel to it. And I came across Bruno Mars, as you mentioned him, doing an impression of Elvis when he was about 10 years old. So you can see, I think Michael Jackson and Elvis and people like that have influenced him quite a lot. But yeah, it's a good point that he makes, though, that's for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, I think it's slightly disingenuous to expect any award ceremony to be a perfect representation of every race and gender in the world, but at the same time it does feel like there's an imbalance there.
And from what I wasn't expecting you to say there, Mark, that that letter's virtually gone ignored and been left. I was expecting you to say that actually they're going to be looking at this, and it'll be interesting to see what happens next year now in the light of that.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, a couple of years ago at the Grammys, there was a big feeling that hip-hop was being overlooked. There was the year where Beck's album, Morning Phase, beat Beyoncé, whose self-titled album had really, you know, driven the conversation about what music was forward. You know, it was a very political album, it was a very personal album, its production was very forward-thinking, and after that, they appointed a special hip-hop committee who were going to, you know, make sure that there was fair representation for these albums, and as yet, no rapper has won Album of the Year at the Grammys, but this year, there were three nominated. And so I feel like, having made that movement, they will probably try and do something to increase the representation of women as well. But we haven't heard anything yet.
That's got to be the coolest committee in the world, hasn't it? A hip-hop committee.
Yes, I would not get on it.
No, I wouldn't either. Okay, then, we'll keep an eye on that then, Mark. And we'll give your details out in a few minutes of time if anybody wants to find you online and get the latest on all of this stuff. Now, rock stars retiring, Elton John, Paul Simon, Ozzy Osbourne have all announced farewell tours. And, of course, was it last week or the week before that we heard that sad news about Neil Diamond not touring anymore as well?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's I guess all of these artists came to the prominence around the same time, the late 60s, the early 70s, yeah. And, you know, they're all probably reaching a point where they would rather be at home. Yeah. And that's certainly what Elton John said. I went to the press conference where he announced his farewell tour. To be fair, Elton John's farewell tour is being done in the most Elton John possible way. It's going to be 300 dates over 3 years. And he said that he wanted to spend more time with his children, the two children yeah. he has with his partner David Furnish, and what we worked out was that by the time this tour finishes, they will actually have left primary school. They'll be 11.
Missed the childhood years completely.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I think with Neil Diamond, obviously the news is a bit sad. He has been diagnosed with Parkinson's yeah. disease and won't be able to tour anymore. Paul Simon said, on the other hand, that he wanted to try retirement on and see what it felt like, so it doesn't feel like his is quite as final as the others, but it's an interesting thing. You know, a lot of performers, I think, being on stage is in their blood, and they will keep performing until the day they die. So to see some people kind of saying we're going to scale this back or we're going to do it differently is an interesting phase. We've never really reached it before. This is the first generation of rock stars that have reached their 70s.
And it's quite interesting because a lot of people can't, I know if you go back as far as Frank Sinatra, I mean, he toured right until his 80s, and so much to the point that there was a big fuss made about him, you know, missing up the lyrics or whatever. But, you know, there's still an appetite to go and see Sinatra, even though he was an older man at the time. But most people kind of fade away or ill health dictates. And it's quite a novelty to have somebody say we're retiring from it. Yeah, like you say.
Yes, it is. Although, of course, we do have to point out that Elton John has announced his retirement twice before and has gone back on his word both times. But yeah, it is. It's an interesting thing. It's something that we've not really come across before. You know, people, like you say, have perhaps reached the end of the period of their life where they can sell tickets, but Elton John can still command huge prices for his shows.
Yeah.
Paul Simon is still a huge live draw everywhere he plays. And, you know, I guess some of them may have looked at someone like Tom Petty, who, you know, was their contemporary and last year was playing an incredible show. You know, I saw him in Hyde Park in London, and 3 months later he was dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps they're beginning to think, well, maybe this
life's too short.
Life
yeah.
takes a huge... Well, and also getting on a plane 200 times a year, it takes a huge physical toll on your body. Mm. Elton John has said he'll probably still play live, but sitting in one location, maybe a Las Vegas residency or something in London like Prince did, because it is not an easy lifestyle to maintain.
I think that's probably the way forward for them. And what about Ozzy Osbourne then? Because I wasn't even sure if he had retired or not, so...
Well, he has, and he retired once before as well in the 90s, and then after 3 years said he was going crazy, not doing anything, sitting yeah. around the house. But he did a big farewell tour last year with Black Sabbath, and I suspect that he's thinking maybe now is the time to buy out. He is probably not the presence he once was on stage. I mean, you know, you cannot be the dynamic performer that you were in the 70s when you've put your body through what Ozzy Osbourne's put his through.
Tell me about it, Mark. Right.
we'll have that discussion off air.
Yeah, well, they put me in a seat nowadays. Right, Justin Timberlake has had an interesting couple of weeks because I watched last Sunday, of course, just last week, halftime Super Bowl, and I'm not a massive Justin Timberlake fan. I don't dislike him. I watched it, quite enjoyed it, and then suddenly I was quite surprised by the backlash on Twitter that he was receiving, so there's been a mixed bag of response to the halftime Super Bowl. Don't know what you picked up on that.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it. I've been a fan of Justin Timberlake. I've seen him in concert. I've seen him give, you know, some incredible performances. Yeah. There was one a couple of years ago when he was given the Video Vanguard Award at the MTV Awards, and he did what was essentially a 15-minute medley of all of his hits up to that point, and it was one of the most well-staged, incredibly tightly choreographed pieces of television you've ever seen. And even just compared to that, his Super Bowl show just felt a little bit flat.
Yeah.
He was running around the stadium, and it felt like he was just getting, you know, from one point to the next in order to smile at the camera, and then he was off to do something else. And it never quite took off. And, you know, that's something that can happen to any performer just on the night. It doesn't work. But what that seems to have done is unleashed a torrent of criticism for him. And I think he really has come unstuck on this album campaign for a number of reasons that really probably aren't in his control at all. Mm. You know, he launched the record with a trailer of him walking through cornfields in his native Memphis and talking about how he was going back to his roots and he was going to be a family man, and it kind of gave the impression he was going to give a country album when it came out last week. And of course, it was nothing of the sort. It was more Justin Timberlake doing the kind of light Michael Jackson that he's always done. Yeah. And I think a lot of people felt confused by the message he was giving out, then let down by the album. Lyrically, it is quite an atrocious piece of work. There are a lot of references to sex that would make, you know, you blush, not because they're explicit, but because they are awful.
Just cheesy and, it's like an orange cover, and it, the cover doesn't kind of, if that's the one, Man of the Woods, is that the album?
Yes, yeah. Man of the Woods, that's the album.
The cover, to me, doesn't look like the music. If does that make any sense to you? It doesn't look like the music you're going to hear on the actual album as well.
No, I agree, and that's the thing. I think it's very easy to get the wrong impression from the record in its delivery and in its conception, and that has prompted a lot of critics to kind of tear it down. I think also there are historically a few things about Justin Timberlake that people have not really felt comfortable with, and the fact that he's delivered an album that's not quite up to scratch has given them permission to talk about them. There was the way he treated Britney Spears after their breakup. He kind of treated, I don't know if you remember when he did to Britney Spears, they were both very young. Mm. It was at the start of both of their careers. They both talked a lot in the press about how they were abstinent sexually and were saving their virginity. And then after the relationship ended, he spent a lot of time joking about the fact that they had sex and that he'd taken her virginity and, you know, stuff very uncomfortable. And then added to that, the last time that he was at the Super Bowl before this previous weekend was the infamous time when Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction happened, and he was part of that show. And a lot of her fans feel that he let her take the blame for that and didn't defend her at the time, did not, you know, he was given awards in the wake of it a week later at the Grammys, and she was blacklisted, uninvited from the Grammys, and her videos were taken off MTV and radio stations in America. And I think that there's a lot of people felt like this was the point where they could get their revenge on him.
And the bottom line is, obviously he's had a massive hit last couple of years, hasn't he, with Can't Fight the Feeling, of course, and that's been a tremendous hit for him. And it just seems lots of people seem to like that song. But this, for me, Alicia Keys is on there, isn't she? And Chris Stapleton as well.
Yes, and to be fair, those are two of the better tracks on the album.
Yeah, well, I'm going to play a little bit of that Morning Light in a moment by Alicia Keys and Justin Timberlake. We'll have a little listen to that in a moment. Mark, is it going to be on your playlist or not?
the album in an edited version will make it onto my playlist. I think there's about six really good songs on there, and the rest of it is not quite up to Justin's usual standard. I have to say, though, you know, you mentioned Can't Stop the Feeling being a massive hit, yeah. And I do think that really all you need to turn these things around is another big hit single.
Yeah, exactly.
You're only as good as your last record, is the old idiom in the music industry, and I think it still holds true.
Well, Mark, thank you for coming on. Really appreciate your time and your expertise, and live there from the BBC. Now, if anybody wants to find you online, is there a Twitter account they can follow and keep up to date on all that you're doing?
It's at Mr. Disco Pop.
Say that again.
At Mr. Disco Pop.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mark. Have a great day.
Thank you very much for having me. Take care.
Take care, my friend. Bless you. Bye-bye. Right, here's the... we'll have a couple of... maybe a minute or so of Justin Timberlake here and Alicia Keys called Morning Light. The new one from Justin Timberlake and Alicia Keys from the new album Man of the Woods. Thank you to Mark Savage from the BBC, and he's on with us on a regular basis talking about latest music and music industry news and all that sort of stuff.